guys. Welcome back to another episode of the Domestic Boyfriends Podcast. My name is Dean, and always with me is my gorgeous co-host, Vincent.
Hello, everybody.
And today we're going to be talking, we're going to be starting something new. We are going to be starting a series of videos on the pod talking about one of our very beloved childhood TV shows that we underestimated the amount of episodes per season for. So we're going to be making this a little bit more long form compared to our recaps that we would usually do. Except for Disney Plus shows. Disney Plus shows we did do episode by episode for the Marvel ones. But when it comes to our general like show talk stuff, like we've done in the past, we're actually going to be doing this in order of episodes. We're going to be breaking down the episodes a little bit more. But we're going to be talking about Code Lyoko. If I think we've referenced it in the pod before. I could be wrong. But it is one of our favorite TV shows growing up. We have very fond memories of the show. Me and Vincent reference this show in very odd ways sometimes. And a lot of our friend group don't know what the fuck the show is. So they never catch on. But this show is very fun. It's very cool. Code Lyoko was originally a French television show. Started back in, one second while I read the Wikipedia article, it released back September 3rd, 2003,
and... Crap, that's so much earlier than I thought it was.
Right? Because I remember this broadcasting back in, like, 2006, but yeah. it didn't end until 2007. Its original, yeah, the last episode of season four, which if we do want to remember, season four was the live action. Was it the live action version of it?
I believe that was the live action one. Yes.
No, it wasn't. Season five is the live action, I believe.
Was season four the lost episodes that only aired on like the weird Cartoon Network live thing?
Code Leo. Sorry, guys, while we work on this introduction.
We'll fix it in post. We'll fix it in post.
Yeah. No. Oh, my bad. Code Lyoko did end. The show Code Lyoko did end in 2007. Because Code Lyoko Evolution was the live action, the official live action sequel, which could be considered a season five. Sorry.
Yes.
I forgot about that. But Code Lyoko ended in 2007. I remember watching it in like 2006 ish. So I watched a lot of the reruns. Originally a French show. Producer Nicholas Alton for season one. He was also the executive producer for season two through four, so he watched it all out into the end. Antifilms was the production company, and Moonscoop was the one who did seasons two through four. Moonscoop has since went out of business and filed for bankruptcy. All of this was originally rerun on Cartoon Network under Moonscoop. This show is a mostly 2D animation that eventually converts itself at times into a 3D CGI animation that I think it still holds up. I don't know how you felt watching the virtualization parts once again, but I think they still look great after, God, over two decades.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I completely agree. I was kind of shell-shocked by, like, how good it still looked.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if, like, it came out, like, now.
Yeah, no, especially with the regular cartoon style that it has. I think it fit in pretty well. We're going to be going through these episodes. We're going to do three episodes a pod. I guess we can just go over, kind of a kind of a general overview. So the plot of that we're going to see within the first episode is our main characters are students at the Kadok Academy, which they're all eighth graders. I just want to point that out. These are all junior high students. This is very important for the next few episodes and the context of the entire show. But they are kids who are junior high academy students, a private junior high, seemingly, because they have room and board there. And they are fighting this computer virus called Xana. Everybody, it seems like the first episode jumps us into this as if they are like mid-season Power Rangers. They know what they're doing. No real introductions, just kind of a lot of insinuated relationships that we see already like blossomed and interacting with, as opposed to like first time meetings that an episode one would generally give us. But the first episode is titled Teddyzilla. Vincent, do you remember what this episode was about?
Yeah, of course.
Give us a general lowdown of what this episode was about. It gives you a good idea of where the direction of the show is going by the themes.
So the main plot of this episode for Teddyzilla is about the two sort of child best friends. They are the fifth or sixth graders of the show. Who like record videos and do like research for like the school paper. They're, you know, they're the photo club and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And coming up later later either that week or that evening was the special school dance where the most popular girl award is going to be handed out. And
very 2000s
is very 2000s. And they go to interview the headmaster's daughter, mm-hmm. because she has won the award always.
Wonder why.
And they were like very, very polite about it too. Sort of like talking with a tone of like looking up to her, even. The headmaster's daughter's name being Sissy, who is going to be a very much mainstay character in the series. She is a brat.
It's a very kind word.
Largely not a good person.
It's the kindest way you could have ever described her, yes.
But they go up to her to like interview her, like, do you have any words? And she says some words that somehow ultimately lead to her telling Millie essentially, no one would ever want to go to a dance with you. You are an idiot and small and a child. Results in her crying, running away, and running up to our main group of friends, Ulric, Odd, Yumi, and Jeremy, who are helping set up for the dance. And Millie asking Ulric if he would go to the dance with her. He says no because he already has a date, and she takes offense to that.
I do want to say in the beginning, when Sissy starts to like bombard them with insults, it's all like, oh, when are you gonna stop playing with your stupid dolls, Millie? Like, oh, if you're such a kid, you'll never understand what big kids really do. Millie starts the beginning of the video saying how they are all attending a junior high. If we're going by like American standards, that means that she's like 2 years younger than them. And Sissy's talking like she's like a whole grown woman. And I think it's so funny when you think about it, because she's like talking down on someone who like barely has an age gap with her. Yeah. Also, she calls her stupid. Meanwhile, she literally has Tweedledee and Tweedledum behind her, who contribute nothing the entire thing except looking exactly like the kid from Recess. You know which one I'm talking about, right?
The one that plots.
Yes. The one with like a little fro.
The teacher's pet guy.
He constantly has this like Cheshire Cat smile on his face. He's doing
the Jim Carrey Grinch smile the whole time.
Who we don't even get the names of. One of them is named Nicholas, we learn in a later episode, and then there's just an Asian guy with a bow tie. Yeah.
And they do the stereotypical thing of laughing.
Very Weevil. Like, oh, very.
You really showed that 5-year-old.
Very Weevil from Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, yes.
No, it's quite mean, quite rude. Millie takes offense to people having plans as well as being told to grow up.
As an 8-year-old.
As an 8-year-old, yeah.
Which, you know, drives her insane and gives her like a makes her want to kill everybody, apparently.
Yeah, no, and she goes back to her bedroom, cries into her doll, which Xana, our main antagonist, who we never actually properly see within like these first 3 episodes. Do we even see the symbol?
So I have it written down in my notes here. Millie talks to her bear. So I have it in my notes here. Millie runs off. Lyoko warriors roast Sissy, because after she makes the little girl cry, all of the Lyoko warriors, which this is like a spoiler for ahead, but this is what they call themselves, our main cast.
In like season 3.
Yeah. Well, they didn't give themselves like names. They just, you know, when they start doing stuff, they're like, oh man, we really do got to have names for ourselves. But it's easier just to call them that. But they all like start roasting Sissy about how stupid she is. Like Ulrich's just like, oh, don't worry, Sissy. Like if you had 2 more brain cells, I'd probably consider, like, if you had 2 more neurons in your brain, I'd probably consider.
No. This is right at the end.
Oh yeah, never mind.
That's how they end the episode.
But like, the Lyoko warriors just start roasting Sissy. They call like calling her stupid and different things. But then Millie, I put in my notes, Millie talks to her bear and starts talking about how she starts talking bad about the older kids, which, again, maybe a year and a half, 2 years age gap, but for this little kid, it's like, it's really getting to her. She starts talking about how the older kids are stupid and everything. And then I say Xana possesses the bear somehow.
Xana grants a wish.
Xana is a computer virus, and his evil smog just infects from like, it infects anything from outlets. In this episode, Xana like creeps through a light and somehow infects the bear. Not a mechanical bear either. Just want to bring that up. Actual teddy bear. And then she starts talking to it. And then she leaves the bear. A bunch of other shenanigans start to happen. Once the bear gets possessed by Xana, one of the most awkward scenes to watch in all of my life right now comes onto the screen, where we watch, these are middle schoolers, by the way. I don't know why the show does this. They have a scene where the Xana bear stalks Sissy as she's changing in her bedroom.
Yeah,
very like murderer style. And it like pushes her stuff from her shelves. And she runs out of her bedroom and runs into her father, who is the principal's arms. And everybody's just kind of watching her as she's like in a robe and has like a face mask on, and she's like crying, and he's just like, oh my gosh. And then everybody's just like, what did you see? And she's just like, a bear. And then they're all just like, what the fuck? No one's like believing what she's like saying, and she's all frantic, and the Lyoko warriors like immediately are just like, it might be Xana. So they decide to investigate it. And what is it? Millie, I have it here in my notes. My teddy bear is gone. Sissy, or Millie and Tamiya go to where her teddy bear was, which, I don't want to correct you, but it wasn't in her bedroom. It was actually in this like storage room that she stormed off to.
Yeah.
That Xana possessed it from. And she's like, my bear's gone. Right. And then this is the first time we see Jim, the gym teacher.
Character in the whole show.
One of the most amazing characters in the show. The first three episodes do him so well, especially the last one. He says that they shouldn't be in school grounds, and they got grounded from going to the prom. So even though Millie is mad that the big kids won't hang out with her, she's even more mad because she can't go to the place that no one invited her to. Womp, womp, womp.
I would like to take this moment to point out, while we have like now been introduced to everyone, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. This is the main cast, bar a couple other people. This is the main cast.
This is for those of you who are going to try out this show after listening to this episode, or maybe before, but are still listening to this part at least. Do keep in mind this part, because I felt it was very important and I was very confused and kind of distraught about it. This is the pilot of the show. Things are a little rougher than normal. The animation is great. The style is great. God, is the voice acting some of the worst voice acting I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, this...
Everyone sounds so gross.
This show takes a while for them to find their style for their voices, and honestly, it's like, true. Honestly, like, this is a 2000s kid show. Even if it is for the French, it definitely has its rough start, especially with like plot. But this show has like a Power Rangers Monster of the Week problem. But it's all some of it does eventually lead towards the plot and different things like that. It's kind of the way that the show works. But yeah, like Vincent said, it's a rough start.
Like I made sure to write it down in my notes. The voice acting does not sound like how I remember it. And then the next note is the voice acting makes me sad. This has to get better post this episode.
I think it gets better.
It does. It immediately gets better, except for Jeremy, who sounds hilarious.
I think it gets better next season is what happens. It's like when you watch
Odd immediately sounds better. That's for sure.
It's like when you watched the last episode of season one of Chaotic, and then you go to season two, episode one, and you're just like, "What the fuck happened to the animation style?"
Yeah,
you're just like, "Whoa, this is completely different. This isn't a Newgrounds animation." But yeah. No, it will get better. If you start watching this, it will get better. Especially the plot and the action, honestly. But we'll get to that here in a little bit. So Millie and Tamiya are outside just kind of crying and talking about her bear. Odd goes and finds her and decides to take the investigation side to himself. Meanwhile, Jim gets attacked by the bear. And it leads to one of the funniest scenes in the episode, where Jim is attacked, put in the infirmary, and the principal questions him because he's drawn a picture of the bear as the perpetrator. And the principal is just like, you know what? I don't think we got to tell anybody. We ain't got to call the cops. It was just like, how about you just lay down for a while, Jim? Which will lead to a very funny scene later also, because the principal is just denying his trauma because he doesn't believe a giant bear attacked this grown man. It pretty much confirms that Xana is in the teddy bear, if we couldn't already know it. Then Odd takes the crumpled up evidence that he found in the trash can of the Xana bear to the gang. which then sends everybody off in different cardinal directions. This is pretty common. Whenever the sign of Xana is there, usually some people are going to stay in the material world, and then other people are going to be running off in a different direction, and they're going to be going to, in my notes I have the warehouse, but it's actually just called the factory, is what we call it.
Yes.
For this being the pilot, I wrote down the weird... You remember when Odd threw the skateboard and it was a transition scene? That was a little weird. I put weird power-up skateboard scene because it looked like he was about to do a level one attack in a fighting game. There's like this sewer system that connects the school to this abandoned factory that we'll get more context on later, possibly. And that context is very important and kind of alluded to with some of the other things. There is also something that we kind of skipped over, is that when the before the Xana Bear incident happened, is that Jeremy did talk to Aelita. Aelita, it seemingly is just this girl in a computer that we will get more context about later, but they were talking about Xana before Xana even came up with the bear. So we get hints at stuff, but now we're shown in the factory that Jeremy and I think Odd go to. Jeremy and Odd go to it, and they have a skateboard scene. All of them have skateboards except Jeremy. Jeremy has a fucking scooter. Or what is that? Is that considered? That's a scooter, right?
It's a scooter.
A push scooter.
They're on their way to the factory.
What a fucking nerd!
Yumi is busy doing her own thing, getting ready for the dance.
Yes, because
not knowing about anything going on, and Ulrich's like, "Oh no, it's going to attack Yumi with his psychic powers."
The inference that he's gonna attack the enemies. As a pilot, doesn't give us a lot of context, but Xana is bad guy and these guys are the good guys, so he assumes that the bear is going to attack the allies of the Lyoko warriors. We get the first scene of someone getting materialized into what we eventually get told is Lyoko, this whole digital world that Aelita lives in. We get the context that Aelita doesn't want to live in there, and she is somehow trapped in there. Later context is going to be brought up in the rest of the season for that. But Odd and seemingly the other guys can go in there, come in and out of it. But they have to do something in the world of Lyoko to fight against Xana, who is causing problems in the real world. And the problems currently are that this big-ass bear is attacking everybody.
Well, it's not a big-ass bear yet, but the next time we check in, when Ulrich manages to find Yumi, is like, come on, we gotta get out of here, in her house, and start dragging her out. And she's like, can you tell me why? And he's like, we gotta go. And then the ground starts shaking.
Like a kaiju
bear has gone from being the size of a teddy bear to being the size
of like a building.
Of a building.
Like, it's crazy. I don't understand how this happened, but a computer virus infected a teddy bear. Yeah, something. But that is what's happening in the real world. And then we go back to Lyoko, and they are looking for what they're calling a tower. And if they get to the tower, Aelita can stop what is happening in the real world from whatever Xana is doing. And they seemingly can change everything back to how it was. We get introduced to the first and the weakest Xana monster, the Cankrelats, which are these like head crab looking motherfuckers. One of the coolest designs in the show, in my opinion. I think we're going to see a lot more of these. This is one of my favorite designs. I like almost all of them. In the later seasons, we get some more detailed ones, but these are the first ones we see. They're pretty cool.
It's a hot take, but
you hate these.
I think once we get to like the later season designs for like, you know, the tarantulas forward, I think all of the designs except for the like Scophozoa or whatever are just horrible.
What?
I hate them. I love all of the early designs that we have so much.
What? I can't believe you said these things. Are you telling me you don't like the manta rays?
Okay, the mantas are cool. But like, you know, the monsters that live in the digital sea look stupid.
The creepers?
The creepers.
They're the ones that are in Sector 5.
Yeah.
Aw, man.
Calamar.
Okay. Anyway, this is spoilers for everybody else. I'm very disappointed.
Look, my favorite
in you, Vincent.
Is the crab, okay? I love the crab.
Oh, well, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah,
but,
we will. It's in my fucking notes.
But, so the whole rest of the episode, is pretty much pretty generic. We get to see in the world of Lyoko, they're attacked by the Kinkrelets. Odd. So I think this is a perfect time to talk about. We haven't talked about this yet, but the context of it will be a long time from now. But we're gonna talk. I want to talk about the Lyoko designs. So. When someone gets digitalized in the world of Lyoko, like parts of their personality get to come out in a way, into their digital form. But we see Odd's design in general is very out there. He's a guy that wears a bunch of purple baggy clothes. His hair is spiked up like he's Super Saiyan Vegeta, hairline included, with a strip of purple in the middle of it. And in his Lyoko design, it's the same, except he's a furry, for lack of better context. He has, like, facial whiskers. He has claws. He has, like arm net all the way up his arm. He has claws, and he has a tail. This is his power set, because Lyoko's kind of like a game. I think it gets even referenced like a game too, in later seasons and later episodes. But Odd is like the equivalent of like an assassin type character. He's very agile. During this episode, we see him like latch onto a wall to save Aelita, because she falls. He has cat-like reflexes, he has high agility, and he can also shoot darts out of his wrist as if he was like Spider-Man but lethal. But I just wanted to talk about it. I want to know your opinions. What are your opinions on Odd's Lyoko design? Because we'll have to get to episode 3 to talk about all of them. But I want to know how you feel about it without the nostalgia goggles, like now looking back at it as we're reviewing it.
So Odd's, and like you said, we'll cover like everyone else's when we get to it. Aelita is in her own like category, because they put so much more like attention and detail to hers, because that's like her design.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And that is all we know her as. At least for these first 3 episodes. Who knows what the future holds. But but Odd, I think out of like the main cast, I think Odd's design is the best out of all of them. I think it still holds up pretty well. I quite like his.
That's a strong opinion.
I've always enjoyed his attack as well, with like laser arrow and whatnot. I love the fact that he's got his dog on his chest. That's just cute.
Yes, Kiwi on the chest is a nice detail.
Yeah, no. But like, I've as a kid, like, my aesthetic for like a cool looking character was a purple and yellow character that shot like arrows. Like, whenever I would play one of my favorite video games as a kid, Sonic Heroes, even though I never played Knuckles Chaotix, I would always play the Chaotix side so I could play as Espio, because he's purple, yellow, and shoots yellow things.
So Odd was like, you like, I mean, you were a child.
Odd might have been the reason why I had that aesthetic that I liked so much.
I was going to say something, but you were a child then. I didn't want to say it.
That's true. I was a child then.
Yeah, we're not going to say it then.
I'm different now.
Yes.
I'm just a taller child.
Yeah. But I really love the designs that they give them. We'll see the rest later on. I do also want to talk about something. So, like, every Lyoko warrior has, like, additional... They have, like, abilities, right? I don't know if we see this in the future, but Odd has, like, a vision, like, that's so Raven of the future, that Aelita was going to fall down, and then he predicts it. I don't remember if that's a thing we see in the future. Just like, that's a little weird. I don't remember that happening at all, because that would have been very helpful in the future.
Yeah. No, that was weird. That was fun.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was cool to see. But so through the rest of this episode, we see them trying to go find the tower. They get eventually chased by another new enemy, a mega tank, which is literally a better version of what a roller droid is in Star Wars. It's just a big giant ball that opens up and eventually starts blasting you. A very simple yet cool looking design. And we see in the real world, while they're kind of struggling to get to the tower, Yumi and Ulrich go back to the school to try and warn everybody of the giant Godzilla-sized teddy bear. Maybe not Godzilla-sized yet. King Kong-sized teddy bear that is going to attack everybody in the school from the dance. Because Xana apparently hates middle schoolers, so he decides to attack them instead of, you know, attacking anywhere else. The Beauty Queen pageant selection happens. Missy is nominated, but then Ulrich grabs another microphone to tell everybody that they're about to get attacked by a giant teddy bear. It, verbatim, I have in my notes here, we are about to get attacked by a giant teddy bear. Which Jim immediately says, oh my God.
I knew I wasn't crazy.
Yeah, he's just like, he immediately starts co-signing it, because he's just like, a giant teddy bear? I just got attacked by a giant teddy bear. And they proceed to then get attacked by said giant teddy bear, who Missy screams about. Jim looks like he's about to lose a shit about. And everybody... just cowers in fear. Meanwhile, in Lyoko, Odd clutches the 1v1 against the mega tank, and Aelita goes into the tower, and she then types in the code word Lyoko, seemingly purifying the tower and the area that they are in, and also stopping the attack that Xana had done to him. I put in my notes, meanwhile, Yumi and Ulrich are losing the bear fight. But it doesn't matter, because once Aelita purifies the tower, it sends the code Lyoko throughout the server. And for reasons we don't get explained for a while, we understand that everything returns back in time. Time resets.
Yes.
Back to the start of the episode where Ulrich gets asked by Millie but seemingly he remembers everything that happens. The entire Lyoko warrior cast seemingly does. And he says yes to Millie this time, thus not causing the bear attack, seemingly, and changing the timeline. And that's where the episode ends.
When that happened, and it just made me remember, like, literally every single episode, how, like, it usually ends with this whole return to the past command prompt that they put in.
Yeah.
That they remember what was going on and then learned from what happened so that they could create a different outcome. But no one else remembers it except for them. And the thing that I put down in my notes in particular about this was, oh, this is just like how in Fairly Odd Parents when Timmy Turner's like, I wish everything was back to normal and nobody remembered any of this. So I don't know if there's inspiration drawn from that show or not, because that show came out years beforehand.
I have no idea, honestly.
Because Fairly Odd Parents came out first. But, like, it's basically the same principle.
I really wish that this didn't happen.
An issue, huh?
It's like the Jeremy types on the command. I really wish that this didn't happen. Go back.
Yeah. Oh, I can fix this, right? And without fail, Xana, well, I guess because there weren't any negative emotions that happened due to small child with teddy bear, Xana can no longer infect the teddy bear.
There's that along with context that we get later on. It's so hard to talk about it without spoiling stuff. But that along with context we get later on, we know that Xana cannot do the same thing twice, or at least cannot easily do the same thing twice. So that's the first episode. If you had to rate it, let's do a fun rating system. How many? How many Xanas out of five would you give this?
I'd give this.
First episode, introduction to the story, introduction to the series.
I'd probably give this 2.5 Xanas out of five.
I would, you are generous. I would probably give it 2. Let's go with 2.5 Xanas out of five. There's a hook. This
is not a good introduction to the show.
There's a decent hook here. It's just, you gotta watch, like, this pilot had to have come out along with, like, the first 2 or 3 episodes, because, like, there's not a lot to latch you on to except for, like, the promise of there being action sequences.
Promise of more.
Yeah. Because it
gets fixed in the next episode.
Yeah. Because every episode was just angry kid and bear possession, it'd be a little rough. that was episode 1. We have 2 more to go through. It'll be a lot faster, with these ones, cause they seem to have hit their stride with the second episode immediately. You want to go ahead and start us off for episode 2, Seeing is Believing.
Well, you have more detailed notes on these episodes.
Okay, I can do it. I can do it. Yeah. So this episode starts off, they're in science class. They're talking about science class stuff. The power of it's specific. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Class. Yeah.
I was going to say, like, band.
The band. Yeah, no. Because it confuses you there for a minute. Because there's 2 overlying things. One that doesn't get referenced until the end. You didn't think a nuclear power plant and a rock band were going to converge like this. But they have, like, this scientist guest that's talking in their science class that talks about a local power plant that's actually a nuclear power plant, given more context. They go through the lecture. They ask if there's any questions. Jeremy asks the idea of converting virtual matter into real matter. And I have in my notes here, Jeremy's a nerd because all the Lyoko warriors look at him, and then everybody in the class laughs at him. Including like the guy that's a guest is just like, yeah, that's a dumb thing to ask because you're just asking me a bunch of fictional nonsense. And the teacher tries to like co-sign him and be like, he's a very vivid imaginer. Like he's very smart and he's very outgoing about it. The lights seem to flicker, and immediately Jeremy's just like, it's Santa.
His Santa sense is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yumi's not in this class. We see that Sissy and her two guys that are with her, the bully group, are in this class with Odd, Ulrich, and Jeremy. Yumi is waiting outside with them. Sissy and Yumi have this weird like tension, like they're love rivals. There's an Ulrich love triangle that you see developing within the next few episodes. And we also get an introduction to the second part of the series of the episode, and that's the principal agreeing to them starting a rock band that Odd calls the Foxtrot Fanatics.
It's true. There's one caveat, though.
Yes, that
he has to allow anyone to give it a shot and try out.
Yes. Yumi also says that Pop Rung Progressives was another contender for the name. Very, very woke. Very woke names here. They go off and do their band thing, go off and have auditions. It has to be open auditions, like the principal said. And meanwhile, Jeremy goes off and investigates the outage. Goes ahead and talks to Aelita and... Yeah.
But while handing out flyers for tryouts, one of Sissy's friends, Nicholas, walks up to get one and smiles at Odd, and Odd looks at him, smiles, and then just completely shuns him and doesn't give one to him. Which, honestly, dick move, Odd.
Dick move, indeed, Odd. This happens in the cafeteria. I just made a note that Jeremy likes Brussels sprouts. What a fucking nerd.
Like Brussels sprouts.
You do?
No, he does.
Yeah, no, that's what I said. Yeah.
That's like a hidden theme throughout the show. Jeremy is almost always eating Brussels sprouts.
Interesting. I did not know that.
You just keep looking at his school lunches. A lot of the time it's going to be like veggies or Brussels sprouts in particular.
Wow. What a fucking nerd. Anyway, we see the auditions happen. Everything happens after lunch. They get an audition from a guy that was in their science class that I swear was going to be someone important because I thought they were someone in the future seasons, but they weren't at all. They play a horrible set. This girl named Naomi comes on, plays a set, also is pretty bad. But Odd's like, this girl's hot. Odd's like, she can join the band. Meanwhile, Yumi and Ulrich are just like, dude, come on, what are you doing here? The power goes off. There's a voltage problem, and then Nicholas, the previously mentioned drummer that is also a friend of Sissy, proceeds to enter, and
Sissy goes to bat for him. And mm-hmm. It's like, look, I have no interest in joining your band.
I don't like you guys.
My dad said that you guys needed to let everyone try. And Nicholas loves to play the drums. And honestly, and in my notes I put down here, Sissy is so nice to her friends. She's not nice to anyone else, but her friends, she's got their backs, which I appreciate.
Sometimes. In the first episode, she called them stupid and then said, come on, let's go.
She's the Draco Malfoy of the show, and they're Crabbe and Goyle. You know, it's and like Odd's just like not believing anything could be remotely good coming from him.
Odd and also Nicholas has a big bias.
Jams, dude. Nicholas is insane.
Yes. Jeremy leaves. So during this whole process, Jeremy leaves to go to the factory. Nicholas jams out. And after Nicholas jams out and like Ulrich and Ymir are just like, wow, this guy's actually really good. It's a tension between the team where Odd is the only one going to bat for Naomi. And they're all like, all right, we either have Nicholas or you don't have a band, because Odd's just like, well, I'm not going to play if Naomi doesn't play. And Yumi's just like, well, we're not going to be
going to sing if Nicholas isn't going to be a part of it. And then Ulrich's like, yeah,
whatever,
I'm a part of this conversation,
whatever my girlfriend thinks.
Yeah. And then the best character in the whole show pops up and Jim's just like, hey, do you guys have room for a trombone player in your band?
And then they proceed to have... So meanwhile, in the background, Jeremy and Aelita go and find a tower. Because in the beginning of the episode, Jeremy's been, like, prodding her to, like, see if there's any issues in Lyoko. And she's just like, oh, I found a tower. And then, meanwhile, we cut back, and it's just Jim playing his heart out on the trombone. And they're just like... Jim, we're more of a rock band here. We don't need a trombone. And then they get cut off by Jeremy needing them to go to Lyoko, which is the perfect reason for them to just ditch the auditions in general. We then get an explanation of what is happening. So the voltage of the, pylons, so the transformers on the power lines are getting supercharged by Xana. So Xana's plan is to supercharge them to a point where it'll overcharge the current that's going to the nuclear power plant that was talked about in the beginning of the episode. And Xana wants to nuke. He just wants to let a nuclear power plant explode in the general facility of this middle school. By the way, nuclear power plant by a middle school for some reason. Not even far away from it.
How do you think they get their energy?
Yeah, apparently. And this prompts something that I think becomes a running theme to an extent in the series where Jeremy, on one hand, half the team, they come to the standstill where half of the team, Ulrich and Ymir, want to tell the authorities, because if they fail in Lyoko and Aelita can't purify the tower and stop Xana, then that means that there's going to be a nuclear reactor going off, right? Because if they do succeed, that means that they can turn back time, stop Xana and turn back time, right? But if they can't, then that means whatever's happening goes through, right? But Jeremy, on the other hand, along with Odd, want to keep Aelita safe because Aelita herself would get outed if they tell the authorities, because she, like, the whole idea of the factory, the whole digital space, an evil program causing havoc in the real world, would cause the investigations, and they think that if they think the authorities would just pull the plug on whatever is happening, thus shutting down the servers and everything like that, and inadvertently killing Aelita, at least seemingly going to kill Aelita, if it were to happen. So, it's a 2-2 vote, but Aelita then asks, doesn't she get a vote because she's a part of this? And they're like, of course you do. And she votes for them to tell the authorities because her one life is not worth all of the hundreds of thousands to millions of lives that could be lost if this nuclear power plant doesn't just melt down. It seems like Xana's going to send like a Kamehameha through the power lines to wherever, like the voltage reactor or the power plant itself, to cause it to explode and have a meltdown. So...
And two things about that.
Mm-hmm.
One, Jeremy, when he heard Aelita say that, he looked so wounded and disgusted by her answer.
Because we have to remember that. So something that we haven't really brought up is that Yumi and Ulrich seemingly have feelings for each other. They have some intimate moments. Sissy seems to like Ulrich, but Jeremy likes Aelita, who in this moment we only believe is just a virtual girl that he's trying to bring back to life, or he's trying to bring to life, which in the context of 2024 is fucking hilarious. But yeah, go on.
But the other thing that I wanted to like point out in particular about this whole Aelita situation, right, is that the amount of like lives she said in particular, like she said millions, but they seemingly live in a very small like town in Europe. But also they have a nuclear power plant. I have no earthly idea where this place is supposed to actually be located.
I don't think we get context for that.
The school is based off of a real school, and in some of the episodes, actually, the sign on the front of the does not say. It says the actual school that it's like based off of.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what it's called, but.
Is it supposed to? I'm guessing it'd be maybe somewhere in France. I'm not really sure. But yeah, I mean, she just doesn't want a Chernobyl to happen again.
Exactly. But like, it's just like, I don't know. Just big something picture. About it like irked me by like the giant overestimation of like how many lives and people are going to be hurt by this, because like, and maybe this is just like me not understanding, towns and living and like whatnot. But never, and this isn't spoilers for the show, but like, it's not like we ever like see like a giant bustling downtown, like cityscape. Everything is the suburbs.
That's very true.
Looks like a town of 500 people that somehow has a private school, a giant factory, giant sewer systems, and a nuclear power plant.
Yeah.
Live in Springfield.
Now that you bring it up, it is, they are literally, they are Townsville. It's not even Townsville. It's just a large town that somehow has a lot of these commodities. Yeah, every single scene we've seen is just neighborhood. It is just cul-de-sac after cul-de-sac. Yeah, now that you bring it up, that's hilarious. But to move on, we do see that the team does split up to enact the plan. We see that two get sent in, Odd and Ulrich gets sent into Lyoko. And Yumi gets sent off to tell the authorities, who at first are just the principal and the scientists that are there. Principal wondering what the heck is going on. And the nuclear scientist saying, oh, it's okay. Yeah, we got it. Yep. We got it figured out. Yeah, it'll be okay.
And then this 8th grader comes busting in. It's like, the town's going to blow up. Believe me. And
the nuclear power plant is going
to
explode. Yeah, she's just like, the voltage is charging up and it's going to lead to the nuclear power plant. They're just like, how do you know that?
You have to believe me. And the professor's like, is there a test next week that she's trying to get out of? Like,
he's just like, what's the enrollment?
A little bit of an extreme.
What's the enrollment requirements for these kids? We then.
Meanwhile, Odd and Ulrich are inside of my favorite zone in Lyoko.
So, for
a science standpoint.
So the context.
Forest zone.
The context of Lyoko is actually really interesting. They're actually not in the forest zone.
Are they not?
No, they're in the desert zone. So the Lyoko has a couple of different zones. We see in the first episode they're in the forest zone. In this episode they are in
the first episode.
Yeah, in the second episode they are in the desert zone. There's a couple other ones. We don't see a new zone, I think, until episode 4, which is not going to be talked about in this video. But there are a couple of different areas in Lyoko that they have to travel to. Is it in my notes? Yeah, so no, it's not here in my notes. Then maybe it is. Okay, never mind. Maybe it's in the next episode. But they go off to find the tower. They can't physically see the tower in the desert zone. there's this big concern. I love when this happens. There's this big concern of, like, you know, the nuclear power plant blowing up in the real world. And meanwhile, like, they don't even look like they're looking that hard in Lyoko.
Or it's just like stabbing his sword in the ground.
And he's just like, Odd's he's like, thinking about
throwing a rock.
Where is it? And Odd's sitting in the middle of a pool of water on the land part, and he's just kind of tossing. He's like throwing a rock in his hands, not even looking like he cares in the world. Like, Aelita's like pacing back and forth. They don't look like they're investigating at all. And just by happen chance, Odd throws the stone into the water to seemingly start skipping it, and it just disappears. And then they find out that it was all an illusion, and there was a second layer of map underneath them that they could just jump through. From there, they do find the tower, and Vincent's apparently favorite enemy in the series pops up.
The crab! But before that, before they hop down, right, through this fake water.
Yes.
Odd is a very questionable decision for the team and, like, their own personal safety. Because, like, we'll get into it, like, even more later on as we learn more and more about Lyoko for, like, later things. But Lyoko, from what we can see, is, like, a bunch of sort of sky islands. And then below Lyoko is this big thing called the Digital Sea. You don't want to go in the Digital Sea because then you'll be gone forever. And Odd does, albeit, like, you know, that isn't presented yet, but still, like, looking back at things, Odd does one of the most questionable things, followed by the other two doing even more of a questionable thing. Because Odd's like, I'm going to check this out. And then he dives in. The right thing to do is to wait for your teammate who's jumping into a weird place to, like, be like, yeah, I'm okay. But the other two look at each other like, yeah. And then they immediately hop in.
Yeah, they're just like, no warning from Odd. Just like, oh, yeah, you're good. Like, I would have at least waited for, like, a thumb to peek through, but they're just like, yeah. Oh, I guess if he's going in.
It's been a second.
And I think the greater context of it all is, so we see in this episode, to put more on your point, but to further this a little bit, the three crabs show up to defend the tower, but we notice, so in the first episode we saw this, but we never saw any resolution to it. And it's that the Lyoko warriors have, like, a health bar, as if this was a video game. And when they hit zero, they get put back into the real world. Very extremely, I want to add. Like, I'm pretty sure these guys experience death when they get sent back to the real world. And we see that Odd gets sent back to the real world once he gets dematerialized and his hit points get put to zero. Seemingly, all of this is okay for the Lyoko warriors because they can go back eventually into Lyoko when they hit zero. So the idea of them jumping in and maybe dying, except going into the sea. The sea's like a no coming back place. But if Odd were to, like, fall and take fall damage or land into a monster, right, he could just come back eventually, right? But I think to add on to that point about them just diving in with no worry is Aelita, who is, to our knowledge, just a digital life form, is just going to haphazardly jump in without any worry about her dying and, you know, not coming back to the real world because she's just a digital life form.
All I'm saying is, like, I understand that they were under a time crunch, but based off of just that, if I was Xana, I would just put those like little shiny thing, little shiny
everywhere.
Like pools of like fake water everywhere, and then Oz just be like, looking like a snack.
I've seen this before. That's funny. So we see that Odd gets sent back into the real world. So we see that Ulrich. Perfect time for us to talk about Ulrich. Ulrich's design, his Lyoko design. In my opinion, I think it gets better in later seasons. In my opinion, it's my second favorite design. And I think you know who my favorite design is. He is based off of like a warrior samurai kind of class. And he has a bunch of ninja abilities. He can create shadow clones of himself. He has like sword skills with his katana. And he also has like massive agility and can jump and run really fast and jump really high. So he has to clutch this 1v3 against the three crabs. Meanwhile, in the real world, Yumi's trying to alert actual authorities who are giving her even more questioning looks. Like,
are they authorities? I thought they were just people working on some electricity poles.
So they're dressed kind of like firemen, so I just assumed that they were people that had some type of authority. They start questioning her like, how do you know this? And then we see later on that she explains it to them, like, and they're just like, supercomputer.
They both smile at each other like, oh, yeah, of
sure, whatever, kid.
Get me out of here.
Because in the context of the show, like, the characters look like they could be teenagers, but in the context of the show, they're like eighth graders, right? So they're like
14.
They're like 12. So, like, in reality, that's very not believable, even though these kids seem to be very mature. She kind of just gets laughed away, even when the thought of them exposing the truth would cause repercussions. All it did was it gave somebody a good laugh is what happened. But we see back in Lyoko, our boy Ulrich, clutches the 1v3. He kills one of the crabs by himself, calls shadow clones to himself, sacks one into the crab, and then the other one also stabs the crab. I do want to point out, they don't talk about it yet, but I do know they talk about it later on in some of these episodes. The weak point for all of the enemies are the Xana symbols that you see on them. Now, in the last episode, we did see a pretty unique enemy, and that was the Megatank. And the Megatank is a big ball that doesn't show its weakness point with its Xana symbol until it opens itself up. Anything that has a visible Xana symbol is where it can get one tapped and hurt. You can hurt these things and dismember them, but to what degree that will help you fight them varies depending on the enemy. But a surefire kill is hitting them in their Xana symbol, which Ulrich does three times, clutching the 1v3. Odd could never, just saying. And I'm going to substantiate that in the next episode, and you know exactly what I'm going to say. We see that Aelita purifies the tower right before the pylon explodes near the power plant. Everything similar to the end of the last episode happens, and the future gets rewritten, and they go back in the past, except... things are a little bit different when it comes to the band.
It's true. Yeah, there we go to the band performing. We have Yumi singing, Ulrich What does Ulrich use? The tambourine?
He's on keys. He's a keyboard player.
Of course, he's on the keys. You can never tell. Odd's blasting away on the guitar. Odd's a very good guitarist. Nicholas is jamming out on the drums.
Mm-hmm.
And my boy Jim is tromboning away. I wrote down here in my notes two things. One, Jim continues to be the best character. Yes. I adore that, man. That man is so amazing. But also, I wrote down, after hearing her sing, Yumi saying that she would leave the band was not nearly as big of a threat as she made it out to be.
Could have easily been replaced.
Could have been Naomi, I'm just saying.
But we see that they're jamming out, and then we also see that Sissy is not too happy, even though she was co-signing her friend being on the band. And then we see Jeremy in the back munching on popcorn, excited about everything. But he then says this line I have written down saying, "Your energy is super nuclear. You're going to make this town explode." Which in the context of everybody else probably sounds very weird, but for all of his friends is a remembrance that they almost failed at their mission and they almost became Chernobyl Part 2.
Yay, friendship.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was the second episode. I would rate this a lot higher. I give this like a 3 out of 5. 3 Xanas out of 5 is what I'd give it. It's a lot more stronger when it comes to the pacing, in my opinion. And it kind of gets right down to it and adds a little bit more tension. We see a little bit more back and forth between the characters with the whole deciding between telling the authorities and keeping the identity of the factory safe. So I think that's some interesting context moving forward for the rest of the show. What do you think?
I completely agree. Okay. I honestly would have, like, albeit the tone for this episode was definitely a lot, like, harsher and darker at times and, like, a lot more grim for, like, the potential outcome of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we went from giant teddy bear.
First episode.
We went from giant teddy bear
nuclear exposure
to a nuclear meltdown happening, yeah. And it just gets worse. It just gets worse. I'm pretty sure within this season we eventually do get one of my favorite and one of the creepiest episodes, but we'll get there eventually. Possibly in time for Halloween, but I don't actually know when these episodes come out. Or like what episode order looks like. I could be wrong. I think it is. No, it is not. Wait. Oh, never mind. Next season. Season 2 is when it happens. Never mind. I take it back. There is a zombie episode in the show. That's not until season 2.
Oh, yeah!
That's not until season 2. I thought it was sooner. But yeah, the stakes get a lot higher from giant teddy bear attacking the city to nuclear meltdown. But we're on to the last episode that we're going to talk about for this episode of the podcast. Ooh, excuse me. And it is episode 3, Holiday in the Fog. So this episode's a lot fresher in my head, so I don't really have to go off my notes too much. The context of this episode is that they're about to be on holiday vacation. The episode begins with Jeremy and Ulrich sneaking around and seemingly starting to cause some ruckus on campus. They are spraying some graffiti of Jim, along with the combination of Kiwi, Odd's dog, waking Jim up waking him up from his sleep. At just about the same time, seemingly timed very well, with the graffiti being finished by Jeremy and Ulrich, Jim sees it, but only sees Jeremy there, gives Jeremy detention, He meets with the principal the next day, and he does it on purpose because we get context with the rest of the Lyoko Warriors that he did it on purpose because if everybody is gone for the weekend and nobody is there in town to go to see the supercomputer, there's no way for them to monitor Xana. So he did this on purpose so he could stay and monitor Xana, and so he can also do some studies on doing real virtual materialization for Aelita. So he gets detention over the holiday. This is kind of the context and where we get, I don't think they talk about this until later seasons, but this is a boarding school, or at least a private school. Like I said before, they get room and board here. They live here. So on holidays, they get the opportunity to leave. Apparently, unless they get detention where they get to stay in the school.
Which is weird.
Yeah. Odd, but.
Oh, you want to see your family? Too bad. You didn't do good enough in school. You're staying in school.
You got an F. You're stuck with us forever. Your parents can't afford it. You're mine now. And Sissy and her gang overhear this conversation. And she then convinces her father to stay home. Or not to stay home. To stay in school. Which doesn't make any sense. Because she is the principal's daughter, I would assume that anything would have probably exempted her from staying in the school, especially because if I was the principal, I'd be like, well, I'll see you at home because I'm not staying here over break because it's also a break for him because he's the principal. So she's able to convince her father for her to stay in the dorms over the holiday because she wants to spy on Jeremy because she heard the crew talk about Xana and that piques her interest. For context later, we then learn why she wants to stay all over again. It's not just because she is a nosy Nancy, but we get a little bit more context on why. We find out that the other three have some semblance of plans. Ulrich is failing in math, so he has to go home and study with a math tutor. Yumi's going to visit some relatives with her family over the break, and Odd is seemingly just going home. All of them except Ulrich are very excited about this, to which Jeremy's just like, it's okay, I'm going to spend the holiday with my virtual girlfriend. But we then get to see Sissy also interjects again by saying that she is going to be staying over the holiday along with Jeremy to spy on him. But Jim then grabs both of them and says, I'm supposed to be watching over both of you because Jeremy has to clean the wall that he vandalized. And Sissy's dad told Jim to watch over her because her excuse for staying over in school was that she was failing math. So her father was just like, you know what? You're failing math. I'm going to have Jim watch over you. So
she must have also been actually failing math.
Yeah.
If I was her dad, I for sure would immediately after that talk be like, what else is she failing? I would have looked at her grades.
Yeah. So apparently she convinced him with the absolute truth, not even lying. Big L for Sissy there. So some time passes, the vacation starts, everybody leaves except Jeremy, Sissy, and Jim, seemingly, because for the entirety of the episode, these are the only people that we see have stayed on campus. Where's the rest of the staff? Who the fuck knows? And we also see that Xana is active and is inside the janitor's closet, and once again infects a non-mechanical thing and decides to infect this type of mysterious liquid. Meanwhile, the context is while Jeremy is cleaning the walls along with Sissy, starting on her studying, she bothers him because she's like, who is Xana? And she's like, is it your girlfriend? Is it a friend? And he's just like, he says something smart. I don't remember what it was. I don't know if you ever wrote it down.
No, what I have written down here is that Jeremy does a pretty spot-on Jim impression, and then I questioned why there was like a weird sad trombone noise when Jim comes up behind Jeremy doing his impression of him.
Sissy He says that he's taking a break and makes Sissy do it and does a gym impression. He also, she says something like, I'm not that stupid. I have in my notes here where Jeremy says, you said it, not me. And then proceeds to walk over and sits in Jim's chair. So we move on to some other scenes. Jeremy wants to study more on materialization in the supercomputer, so he sneaks off, goes to the factory while everybody's asleep. Sissy wants to spy on Jeremy, but by the time that he goes back to the factory, Sissy's sleeping, even though she tried to plan and stay up all night to watch him. Very creepy, by the way. We then see that he comes back. So he tries to head out to the factory, and then he then finds the room that Xana infected the chemicals in and nearly like gets hit with the Xana gas is what I've been calling it in my notes. Xana reawakens, the gas starts to spread, but Jeremy makes it to the factory. He analyzes the gas, and apparently it's a dangerously poisonous gas that the school has in one of their janitor's closets. And Jim finds that Jeremy's gone, and Sissy is caught in the gas, and Jim and Sissy are running away from the gas like it's the fucking fog from The Mist or something like that.
Yeah, they're very scared of it. But also, honestly, like, I would be too if there's like a weird fog that is like seemingly following me.
Yeah. Also, I'm pretty sure they breathe it in a little bit and they feel like they're dying because it's a mysteriously poisonous gas that, once again, the school just happens to have in their closets.
Yeah.
So Jeremy on the supercomputer gets in contact with everybody, sends out SOSs. Ulrich leaves his tutoring. Odd tries to... We see that Odd's, like, trying to smuggle his dog through customs. And they're just like, oh, my gosh.
Your shirt's moving.
Yeah, they're like, what is this? And he's just like, oh, it's a skeleton. And they're just like, your skeleton's moving. He's just like, oh, that's weird. He's just like, oh, that's my dog, Kiwi. I don't know. I don't know how he got in there. Like...
Supposed to be at the grandma's house.
Yeah. Oh, dang, grandma. And then he proceeds to pick up the phone with Jeremy, and he's just like, hi, grandma. He's just like, oh, yeah, I was supposed to leave Kiwi there with you. Oh, you want me to head back? Okay. And then proceeds to leave customs, in the middle of customs, apparently. And Yumi is waiting on her mom, who's trying on dresses. Or I think it's supposed to be her mom. I don't know if it's her mom or her sister. And... when Jeremy gives the SOS, she dips, and her mom's just like, I'm ready to go. And his dad's just like, do you see what's missing? And the door, she didn't even shut the door. She just left her dad's car door open and just left. Meanwhile, Sissy and Jim find a closet to hide in. And we see this, there's a scene after that where Jeremy and Aelita are trying to coordinate where the tower is. He finds out that the tower is actually in the forest zone, and she's currently in the desert zone. So she is currently in a tower. It seems like Aelita can access some type of data, either the data of Lyoko and stuff like that, from the towers that are purified. And then I have this in my notes as Aelita trust falls off the platform of the tower to get to another one, because that's what she does. She just kind of makes it to the end of the tower, and she just, like, falls into it and magically falls up into another tower that's purified within the same zone that she needs to be in.
Yeah.
So that was cool. I was looking for that in my notes earlier because I was just like, where did she do that at? Because she just, like, this isn't the first time she just kind of trusts a falling attempt, and she's just like, whatever works, works. But after that, Jeremy goes back to the school, which I kind of question because Jeremy's the computer guy. He's the guy in the chair. And he already sent the SOS to the other Lyoko Warriors. So I was just like, what if Jeremy got, like, you know, what if he got axed by the gas and the rest of them are just sitting at the factory just like, we're ready to go. Yeah. I wonder where Jeremy is. But he goes back to the school looking for them. The Xanagas attacks them, attacks him specifically because he just walks through it. The rest of the gang shows up. They pull Jeremy out of the gas. They then split up. Odd, Yumi, and Jeremy, who's being carried by them, go back to the factory to go back to go to Lyoko. Ulrich throws himself into the gas to go find Jim and Sissy. We then get some context into why Sissy wants to stalk Jeremy in the first place, because she said that she wants to be a part of their gang. And she's confiding this to Jim, who's also in the room with her. And Jim then says, what? Are you talking to me? And then she then...
Why would you want to be friends with those weirdos?
And then she then...
Yeah.
He then proceeds to say, if we don't find a way out of here, then we're not gonna have enough breathable air because of the gas outside. And then Sissy then says, I guess that's... she said, if you wanted me to stop talking, you could have just said so.
Yeah. And then Jim also goes, we just have to wait until Jeremy gets back and then it'll be all okay. Like, you're the adult in this scenario and you are putting your faith in a child who, like, defaced public property.
Not just,
you have no reason to.
Not just that. It's Jeremy, the nerdy kid. Not like the swimmer with max lung capacity or like the buff guy or even like any of the other Lyoko Warriors who seem to be capable and confident people. He's just waiting for Jeremy, the nerd kid, to come and save them somehow from the dangerous gas. But I think it's just so funny. Jim's just like, what? Are you talking to me?
He's like, what? He's the best character in the show.
What are you talking about? So they then get put into, the two of them get put into Lyoko, Yumi, and Odd. I do want to put in, I do think this is a nice detail that we see whenever more than one person gets loaded into Lyoko, is that their loading order is actually put into the virtualization process. So Yumi is before Odd, and if you watch when they get loaded into Lyoko, when the scene transitions, Yumi is more loaded in than Odd is, as opposed to what you would probably see in some that aren't paying attention to detail. Some shows that aren't paying attention to detail would just have them all loading in at the same time. But you see that she is more materialized in the digital world than Odd is, and they both fall from the sky at different times. I just thought that was good attention to detail.
Because I didn't notice that. That's really cool.
Yeah, so like... Yumi goes into the pod, gets scanned in, because there's a process to this all where they each have to be loaded in, he can't just do it all at once. So he has to scan each character. They get loaded into Lyoko, and it's like a normal process of like scanning. I don't know, like for example, me, like us uploading the videos for the podcast, right? Like, one has to process through the editing service, then the next one. So I thought that was a cool attention to detail that the show has.
Yeah.
We then see that they load into the Force Zone. Aelita is there waiting for them. Yumi says, have you seen any monsters? And Aelita said, no, I haven't. And then Odd sees a bunch of cankerlats in the distance and says, man, you must not have been looking that hard. a little jab at Aelita over there. And then we see them fighting them, the weakest enemy in all of Lyoko. And Aelita gets in the way multiple times, and they have to defend her because, once again, Aelita cannot come back to the real world. So they have to take bullets for him. I also want to take a jab at Odd here. He was standing still, and it fired at him, and he just got hit.
Yep.
For the guy with agility, he's not using it very well. I put in my notes, can't believe they're getting cornered by the weakest enemies. It's just like three. There's like maybe four of them.
Yeah, you could kick them and they would go flying. It's quite upsetting. It gets even more upsetting later in the episode.
Yeah. So we get to see them fighting them. They find the tower. Aelita and Odd go a separate direction from Yumi. Yumi tries to use a pretty cool ability. She actually shows telekinesis, which is...
I completely forgot that she had that.
Yeah, I've been noting all of these abilities because I do not remember any of these. I just remember their weapons. The ability set that I remember from this series is that they all can move really good. Like, they're all acrobatic, and they all have their unique weapons. And then eventually, when they get different abilities and stuff in later seasons. But Yumi uses her telekinesis to pick up a rock, smashes it on one, and then hits another one. And then she gets hit multiple times while standing still. And then she gets dematerialized. And she just gets killed by the weakest enemy in Lyoko. We then see that Aelita goes to the tower. She has to, like, it's in the middle of, like, an island. Like Vincent said earlier, Lyoko is just a bunch of sky islands. Like, they're vaguely connected. But Aelita sees, like, she can, like, command platforms to come up that are, like, seemingly made of wood for her to walk towards it or seemingly hop from platform to platform. Meanwhile, Odd is over here fighting for his fucking life against these Cankrelats, and he's on like 50 HP against one, and he's like 2 feet away from this thing, and he kamikazes into it. They shoot at each other at the same time.
It's even worse, because like he makes it acknowledge that he exists. He's like, hey. And then there's a slow spin around them, too, as they just look at each other, and they're like, yeah, and then shoot each other.
Yeah, it's... In the context of the show, it doesn't matter as long as Aelita gets to the tower, because once she gets to the tower, at least in this season, she's safe. Because we'll see in later seasons how it changes and stakes get changed. But we see that she makes it to the tower. The gas is getting worse. Ulrich just dies. I want to confirm that Ulrich's just dead here. He's just sitting on the ground, getting overtaken. All three of them are dead, just by that poisonous gas.
Very important thing here as well. Like, Ulrich gets to them, right?
Oh, and yeah, yes,
reaches out, yes, grabs him, looks at him. Like, looks at him for like a solid half a second and is like, see, sissy, I told you Jeremy would come for us. And then she's like, Ulrich? And he's like, wait a minute.
Yeah, someone who wears a completely different outfit, has a completely different hair color and hairstyle. He like
a completely different height and body build.
He also just kind of yoinks him and assumes it's Jeremy. He yoinks an unconscious body and says, I told you he would save us, as if the unconscious body was going to help them through it. He then picks up the phone, and then Jeremy's on the other line just like, Jim? And he's like, Jeremy? Like, in his head, he's just like, Jeremy, why aren't you here with us? Like, why aren't you saving us right now? And we get the scene where Aelita purifies the tower. And I have it here in my notes. For the last two episodes, I have put Return to the Past Now. And as a subsection to the note, I put, he hasn't said it. And in episode two, I put, he still hasn't said it. And in this episode, I said, Jeremy finally says the line. Because from this episode forward, whenever Aelita types in the code Lyoko into the tower, Jeremy presses a button on his computer, causing the code to launch thus starting the time erasure / time travel scenario. But when you watch this series, the one thing that I will constantly remember is that one line where Jeremy says, "Return to the past now.
I wish everything was back to normal."
Yeah. I wish everything went back to normal and nothing happened.
And no one ever remembered any of this.
We then get shown that they do the same exact thing. Jeremy and Ulrich spray paint Jim again, except this time they spray him with a crown like the King Jim is. Except this time Ulrich decides to stay for vacation instead of going to study. I guess that's a benefit of them remembering everything and being able to redo their actions because of the time travel. But in this, at the end of this episode, we actually get some context. Ulrich makes the offhanded remark that Jeremy doesn't have to do this again because Xana doesn't have enough time to recharge before he comes online again. So it gives us some context that we talked about earlier, that yes, they can change the timeline by resetting the past with the supercomputer, but at the same time, the reset, also how it doesn't affect the Lyoko warriors, apparently also doesn't affect Xana, because Xana, when he awakens and does his shenanigans, once they depower him from within Lyoko, he has to recharge again. So the events at the end of this episode don't necessarily have to happen, but they do it anyway, because Jim is a king and they want to. I don't even think they'd stay. I don't think Jim would be as mad. They say it themselves that Jim probably wouldn't hate this as compared to the previous spray paint that like imagines him as a fool in comparison. But yeah. And that's where the episode ends. So that's the end of the third episode. What did you think? Give me your overall opinion.
I liked this episode a lot, mostly because we got like prime grade A Jim in this episode. We got like the best of him.
Are you talking to me?
It's nice that we now have seen everyone fully digitalized inside of Lyoko, yes. Except for Jeremy. So far.
How do you feel about Yumi's Lyoko design?
I get it from a fundamental level. I think with how the show looks in Lyoko, she looks really, really weird and off-putting. I love what they like were trying to go for from like respecting like her roots in particular and who like her family and whatnot, which is a very important part of her, as we will go and find out as we interact with her more and more throughout our time. But Lyoko does not do her any justice.
Yeah. I do want to bring up...
Also, why was she psychic?
It's an ability...
Why could she use psychic abilities?
It's an ability that she keeps throughout the entire series. But I do want to bring up that her design does change. I'm not sure why it does. Her Lyoko design does change.
All of their Lyoko designs change.
But hers is
a very specific reason that happens. That would be spoilers.
But she... hers is... Yes, it is a specific reason, but hers is the most drastic.
Yes.
Compared to everyone else's. So overall, how many Xanas would you give? I'd honestly give this like a... This gets like a 3.5. I think
I'd give this one a 4. I quite enjoyed this one.
This one fits into the regular kind of like scenario of the week, like monster of the week, like Xana attack of the week that we get. you know, I feel like the first two are pretty weak in comparison to the rest of the episodes that we're going to get, but I feel like this is a good, this is like how, this is probably like the average Code Lyoko episode that doesn't have the most plot relevance in it, how they feel generally. Now with these three under our belt, you know, there's a lot more that we're going to talk about when it comes to Code Lyoko, while covering the first season. These first three episodes, how do you feel as in like, if this was like a hour, like they could chuck this in as like an hour long, hour 15 minute long episode special on TV, how would you feel about this as like, for one, an enjoyable bunch of episodes to watch, and two, an introduction to the series?
I feel like this does a really, really good job introducing the series as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
The first episode being, you know, as jarring as it was, it still did a pretty solid job.
Uh-huh.
I think this would be a great special or anything to like just put up there and like show off. It hurts, because I did a little research before this about like, because I never looked into it exactly why the show got canceled.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no real given reason. The closest thing that we have to it is just the fact that the Cartoon Network CEOs and whatnot just openly said, oh, I just don't really like the show. I find it upsetting. And like, for that to be the reason why this show got canned and, you know, other things got to exist because it's just gone, makes me very sad.
Yeah.
Because, like, this could come out nowadays and no one would really bat an eye at like, it just being how it is. It looks perfect and it has aged beautifully.
Yeah, I agree with that. These first three episodes are great introductions. I was telling Vincent before we started recording that we might be making this into a weekly thing that we talk about, just because, for one, there's 26 episodes in a season, so that means that we would have to be doing this, like, we'd either have to be doing a bunch of episodes within one episode of the podcast, or we'd have to consistently be pushing these out. But I found, like, this wasn't a hassle. Not saying that us doing the podcast is ever really a hassle. I mean, it just depends on what we're doing. But this is very enjoyable for us to digest. It being the introduction, it definitely got my entertainment in the series going. And I'm really looking forward to the rest of the viewings of season one.
Me as well.
Last thing.
Especially with the fact that we're going to get to see more crabs.
yeah, of course. I can't wait until they become an irrelevant enemy.
they start dying so fast.
I mean, Ulrich just literally one-taps all of them.
I know. Well, that's because Ulrich's broken.
But a last thing, the introduction song, which is also the ending song for the first season, A World Without Danger, is one of our favorite. It's honestly kind of just a good song. Fucking in general. It was made for the show, I'm pretty sure. And it's pretty awesome. Don't skip the opening. It gets stuck in your head every time and you just want to listen to it. And it is kind of a good synopsis of the show. I was watching a couple people talk about how openings for shows go, and they were, I think it might have been them talking about Fairly Odd Parents. Oh no, it was Danny Phantom. So when they make like introductions for shows like that, they kind of want to make a summary of the origin story of, or like what the show's about in the opening sequence. So in the opening of Danny Phantom, it's just his origin story, right? Without greater context, it's you finding out that young Danny Phantom was just 14 when he got his ghost powers from his family's strange machine, right? He's a ghost guy. He can do ghost things. And he's saving people from evil ghosts, right? Same thing with something like Fairly Odd Parents. You find out that in the opening, it shows you that Timmy's a kid down on his luck. He doesn't have a lot of good things going for him. He gets fairy godparents. They can cast his wishes within reason. And, you know, he can do all types of crazy things with them. Even things like Ben 10. In the Ben 10 opening, we love Ben 10 here. Within the Ben 10 opening, we do have the pilot that does show us the introduction of Ben 10. But within the opening, it tells you that this kid found a watch and now he can transform into 10 different aliens that are all different within their context. And he is a hero in that he uses these abilities to fight evil, right? So that you take that to the world without danger, and the entire song, bar for bar, is just describing the events of Code Lyoko. Like, a world of machines talking about Xana. one of them is a world of machines. It could shatter human nature. And all that we need is a way to find the answer. Literally talking about how Xana wants to take over the world with machines. And how the Lyoko warriors are the answer to shutting him down. Also, the word Lyoko is the code word to reset the towers. So, just a little bit of context right there. Little interesting thing I thought of to tie back into it. But do you have anything else about these three episodes? We're going to be talking about Code Lyoko for a while, so I don't know if you want to save some stuff or you want to talk about anything in relevance to these three episodes.
As far as these three episodes go, I am spent on things that I can talk about without possibly moving into the realm of accidentally spoiling things.
Okay, cool. With that, I guess we can end off the pod. Just wanted to thank you guys for listening once again. Shout out to Ultimate Maverick X for our art. We really appreciate you guys supporting us and giving us some downloads. You guys can get in contact with us at any time at our handles over at the good old X, formerly known as Twitter. I am at lying_mask.
I am Vincent Barlow 8.
And you can reach both of us at our handle at Domestic BF Pod on all major platforms. Get ready to hear a lot more about Code Lyoko. I hope you guys are locked into it because we are going to be talking about this for a little bit. It's something we really enjoyed as kids, and we are looking forward to re-watching and reliving some of our favorite episodes. So stay tuned, and we will catch you guys later.
Stay digital, everyone.